You are listening to The Dish on Health IT, brought to you by Point of Care Partners, a leading health IT consultancy. Each episode will feature a rotating panel of senior consultants and guests who will talk about trends and innovations in health IT, while also highlighting how organizations can leverage these advances to solve their business problems. Alex Goss, Vice President and Senior Consultant with Imprato, joins our Dish on Health IT crew to take a look back at the historical policy and standards milestones, how they brought us to where we are today, and to look forward to explore why it's important for the industry to go above and beyond the mentality of just checking the box for policy adherence in order to gain a competitive advantage and achieve better patient outcomes. We hope you find today's episode helpful and that you'll share your topic ideas with us by emailing us at podcast@pocp.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Dish on Health IT, where we break down and discuss some of Health IT's biggest news, most exciting milestones. We at Point of Care Partners are Health IT consultants. We work across all stakeholder groups, payers, healthcare delivery entities, pharma, Health IT vendors, HIEs, and government agencies. And we're viewed as an independent, trusted party, the Switzerland of consultancy. I'm Ken Kleinberg, practice lead for Innovative Technologies, your host as we continue our journey here in 2021, where we feature point of care partner experts as well as leading industry guests. Now, for today's podcast, my co-hosts from Point of Care Partners, Jocelyn Keegan and Pooja Babra, and I are excited to welcome today's special guest, Alex Goss, VP and Senior Consultant for Imprato, an expert in health IT standards, interoperability, government programs, payers, and more. Alex has worn many hats over the years, and we're fortunate to have her here with us today. Among the key topics we'll be asking Ms. Goss about are our healthcare industry regarding health IT, how it's changed over the decades, the important role of technology, regulation, incentives, data liquidity, a lot to discuss today. But before we jump into our discussion, I'd like to have my co-hosts briefly introduce themselves and what excites them about today's podcast. Jocelyn, please go first.
Really excited to have Alex here with us. Jocelyn Keegan, I'm based in Boston and the payer practice lead for Point of Care Partners. In addition, I run the DaVinci Project, where Alex is part of our core PMO team. The reason I'm really excited to have her join us today is when we started our journey on DaVinci about 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago now, which is kind of crazy. Linnell James came to me when we were talking about how we were going to bring providers into the project, how we were going to onboard all of these members, as it became clear we were going to get way bigger, way faster than we expected. And he said, we have to have Alex Goss at the table. She knows how to do this, and she knows all the people. So I'm really excited about our conversation. Our prep session was pretty entertaining. See how well we can do it, not interrupting each other as we fall over each other to answer questions. But really excited to hear Alex's insights. And I think that, you know, there's very few people, I think, as well positioned to talk about a broad swath of activities in the world that we're seeing with the acceleration underway as we really finally move, I think, to what is that semantic interoperability we've been chasing and really leverage, you know, the technology available to get through the business transformation. And Alex is our people. You know, I think that she is pragmatist at heart and understands what it means to operationalize things. So looking forward to hear what she has to say.
Great. Pooja?
Yeah, thanks, Ken. Pooja Babra, I'm the PBM practice lead for Point of Care Partners, and I'm actually really excited to have Alex here. I don't work as closely with Alex as Jocelyn does, but you know, I've kind of followed her work and contribution to the health IT industry over the past few years. And just a couple years ago, I remember having dinner with Alex in the DaVinci crew at HIMSS, and I was just really impressed with, you know, all of the kind of industry background and knowledge she had. So I'm really excited for her to share with our community kind of, you know, where, you know, what's been happening, where she's been, and kind of what's next for interoperability. So really excited to have Alex here today.
Okay, great. Now let's greet our guest, Alex Goss. Welcome to The Dish on Health IT, and thanks for taking some time to talk to us. How about we start with having you more fully introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about your background, your early days with payers.
Well, thank you, Ken and Jocelyn and Pooja. It's really great to be here today. It's an honor. I love collaborating with the Point of Care Partners team. You're a smart group of folks who really are trying to move the industry along and create a better culture around use of standards and how to operationalize them to really achieve the kind of value that we want to see in healthcare and the quality outcomes that we all hope to attain. So let me give you a little bit of background about myself. Believe it or not, I've been doing this for over 30 years. In the very late 80s, I entered the workforce fresh out of college with a degree in public administration with a focus on labor relations. And it's served me well over the years because a lot of the work that I've been doing is really around consensus building. And I was really fortunate to start out my career with as a handful of one of management trainees at a major blue, now known as Highmark. And I worked in their government line of business. And building on the soup to nuts view, the program provided me really helped me cut my teeth in operations management and Medicare Part B appeals. This leapfrogged me into some internal consulting roles, working on initiatives to attain efficiencies through workflow and technology changes while advancing compliance with federal rules. Along the way, I discovered my aptitude for bridging operations, technical and compliance spheres, as well as the facilitation of consensus with lions, tigers, and bears. As a part of my internal staffing consulting role, I supported different operational areas as well as large-scale conversions across the Medicare contracts. This led me into the world of EDI, including representing CMS at ASCX 12, which is, if those who follow the HIPAA line of regulations for transaction standards, develops the medical suite of transaction flows. And I started in 1999 in X12, just as the HIPAA regulations and standards were really taking firm shape. I also formed and chaired the Medicare EDI Functional Work Group to assist in the implementation of HIPAA, as well as leading the implementation of HIPAA for the Medicare Part B division. In 2003, I pivoted out of the Highmark land and decided to take the deep dive into standards by taking a job with Washington Publishing Company, the publisher of the X12 standards. And this provided me with an opportunity to fulfill my elected leadership roles at X12 as a volunteer, like spending 75% of my time doing that leadership wrangling. And it also came along with an opportunity to be a consultant. And my main gig was managing CMS's HIPAA transactions and code set complaints. In 2006, I pivoted again, this time fully into consulting, leveraging my standards and policy expertise with a company called Payformance. So I was able to support our product team and deployments of the company's product, which was a comprehensive solution for claim settlement, EFT and ERA. But I also worked on other various consulting opportunities, which included development of the phase two eligibility operating rule development with CAQH Core, which was really interesting. Meanwhile, I also continued my X12 work, and this included developing the version 5010 and improving the state of industry collaboration among the SDOs or standards development organizations through roles on the ANSI, American National Standards Institute, Informatics Board, designated standards maintenance organizations, and various liaison roles within the community. So about the same time all this was going on, we were evolving our national dialogue around clinical information exchange. And I'd been doing a fair bit of that and collaborating between X12 and HL7 on this thing called attachments, and was really starting to gather a little bit more of an appreciation from my administrative financial perch of the value of that patient-provider interaction and what it meant to data streams downstream. So I took a leap and I resigned from all that I was doing on the national front, including X12, because of a unique opportunity in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania's Governor's Office of Healthcare Reform. And it provided me the unique opportunity to establish a foundation for information exchange. Keep in mind, this was right before ARRA and high tech even came about. Pennsylvania had an idea for a prescription for Pennsylvania to improve our overall healthcare system, understanding the criticality of a data ecosystem underpinning all of it. For the next 8 years, then I stewarded the Commonwealth's HIE program through various phases, including standing up an independent state agency to establish and govern the state's HIE backbone and related initiatives. And this included being the state HIT coordinator under the HITECH grant. During my time in state government, which I never thought I would ever go to the state government after working in pay and chase COB work in Medicare, and I thought I'd go for maybe 2 years, but I lasted more than eight. I was appointed during this time frame to the National Committee on Vital and Health Statistics as a federal advisor to the Secretary of HHS in 2011 and served my two maximum terms permitted. In 2016, I left state government and decided to work with prior colleagues to create a consulting arm of an existing business called Dynavet Solutions is the business, but we created Improdo, which is short for Improvise, Adapt, and Overcome, the Marine informal motto, which is apropos for a service-disabled veteran-owned business. So I love working with Leslie Amrose and Dave Grinberg in the consulting arm. And like POCP, we're a specialized managerial consulting firm with deep Health IT and HIE chops with some very unique experiences across payers, providers, SDOs, policy at federal and state levels. But we're really focused around the business aspects that wrap around the technology. Just a little bit about me.
Well, that's incredible. Thank you. You know, as we were prepping for this podcast, you described what you saw as three eras of health IT, that X12 EDI HIPAA era, this high-tech, affordable care, meaningful use era, and now 21st century cures. Could you describe those eras and this progression from your perspective, how they've been different, and what are we trying to achieve?
Really interesting. Let me start with what we're trying to achieve in some context about the U.S. healthcare system and the journey we've been on. For several decades, we've been trying to address improved affordability and outcomes in our healthcare system. And this includes modifying reimbursement methodologies from fee-for-service to managed care, or in today's world, value-based care, incorporating technology into care delivery and administrative processes to really coalesce the industry to work together and improve data sharing through various regulations and incentives. But there are overarching aspects to our nationwide transformation, which we've had some success at every stage, but over time collectively have had it, still have a lot of bite of the apple to take. And I think we've been looking at issues that we're trying to address, such as trust, governance, interoperable infrastructure, identity management, permitted uses, affordability, efficiency, outcomes, constant learning, but ultimately to get to a patient-centric and safe ecosystem. So in other words, it's about the right data at the right time for the right patient in the right format. It's that game of Clue that Jocelyn likes to talk about. And along the way, we've really gone from this, and I like to say the dawn of HIPAA in 1996. It's hard to believe it's like beyond the legal age for drinking. We've been doing HIPAA. We got HIPAA because the industry, in my opinion, was challenged with self-regulating and being incentivized to really do the right thing to embrace standards like other industry has taken on. And so in 1996, we set off on a journey that really forced us to be on a trajectory as a nation in our information exchange for admin SIMP, administrative simplification. So think of that as really governing or establishing pharmacy and medical stuff standards along the way in the 1999 to 2003 timeframe. Then we rolled up our sleeves and trying to make all of that work and realized that we really needed to bring clinical aspects into it. So we started working on, thanks to the Bush administration, the American Health Information Community, or AHIC, which led us into really figuring out what does clinical data exchange need to look like. And interestingly enough, we got a lot of that memorialized under the High-Tech Health Information Technology and Economic Clinical Health Act of 2009. Followed on the heels of that, we got the Affordable Care Act, which people like to call Obamacare, but ironically, it was a lot of what we did under Bush. But anyway, in 2010, we got that one. And then in around 2015, we got MACRA, the Medicare Access and CHIP Reauthorization Act, which really was establishing a robust quality payment program, changing the way Medicare rewards for clinical value over volume. And this continued our journey with really culminating most recently into our sort of landmark legislation with 21st Century Cures that came about in 2016, which really promotes and funds the acceleration of research, but also along drugs and medical device development, helping with the opioid crisis, but also gives us Section 4000, which is really apropos to what we're talking about with health IT and HIE around certification programs and giving us ONC, another platform to advance the body of work, as we've seen more recently with their final rules in March of 2020. So I can dive a little bit deeper into that, but suspect maybe we would like to banter a little bit more about those various tools in the toolbox that have helped us bring the industry in together to lean in deep on standards and think about now how we can connect everything, because we had HIPAA that gave us admin SIMP. We kind of nibbled along the way, and now 21st Century Cures is really bookending all of that and forcing us into this intersection of clinical administrative data all around the patient.
Yeah, it's great. Thanks for that perspective. Let's dive into 21st Century Cures from a more technology perspective here. This excitement around FHIR APIs and related standards, is it really innovative? And then we'll also bring in Jocelyn and Pooja here. But Alex, please, what do you think?
Do I think it's innovative? I think that has to do with what your definition of innovation is. Because if you're in other industries, they're thinking, yeah, not so much. But for healthcare, we're so complex with the variability of all the data elements that we need and the uniqueness of all of us as individuals and our health statuses that are affected by a variety, you know, our DNA, our social determinants of health, and that uniqueness brings adds to the complexity. And so our current transaction evolution to adopt FHIR, I think, is going to provide us with greater flexibility throughout the entire process. I think of it sort of as like FHIR is the way we're going to bridge a whole bunch of problems. But I think that EDI is not necessarily going away. There is a tremendous engine in today's marketplace that's using EDI, and it's gotten into our DNA of our architectures, our business decisions, the way we do things. And we like to adopt new standards, but where we always fall short is doing the cultural transformation of workflows as opposed to sometimes the check the box mentality. And so I think there's room for multiple tools of standards in the standards toolbox, but we need to let the market shake some of that out in the way that works best for them and respects the historical investments as well as their go forward strategies.
Well, Jocelyn, with your extensive experience with many FHIR accelerators, what are your thoughts here?
You know, I think that Alex has done a great job of sort of laying out sort of how we've gotten to where we are. And I entered healthcare about 10 years ago when really MIPS and macro was first taking off and worked for one of the large payer provider portal companies that was actually owned by Highmark and a number of other blues. So I think that at the heart of what we're looking at is we're at this tipping point, right? And that there's been all these incremental sort of evolutionary investments and all of them. I think there's a lot of negativity, right? About why isn't healthcare further along? But I think that point that Alex makes about sort of the business transformation that's required to get beyond sort of the check the box mentality, I think that there's a number of things that have happened, both from a regulatory perspective, you know, what we're seeing out of 21st Century Cures, what we're seeing out of regulatory action and proposals that are coming out of CMS is really, I think, building on the benefits of all of those things that Alex has just described to get us to a point where we're really, at least for the party of the willing, right, there are going to be people that are going to need to be pulled along, that we're really starting to grapple with and solve not just the complexity around, you know, how to do this at personal health data level via API instead of these large batch files, right? But also, how are we removing sort of, I would say, the disincentives or versus creating incentives? And there are so many drivers to that at this point in time, right? Because it's not just about the rules and it's not just about, you know, the laws that have gone into effect. It really has to do with if we're not doing this, if we're not figuring out how to make value-based care work, what is our alternative, right? Based on the current cost structures and the paralysis that we'll have if we can't free this clinical data so that we really can start to change behaviors. And I feel like often when we make changes, and I don't think this is a healthcare specific problem, you know, I spent the first 10 years, 15 years of my career in a different industry, that we often think that there's this magical big bang event that happens, right? But what you've just heard Alex describe is really this shifting. And, you know, maybe not as fast as everybody wants it to do, but there were so many factors, not just technology, in the way of that shifting happening, that what we've seen is sort of the compacted, you know, movement from a policy perspective from our federal friends, right? In addition to the industry grappling with the cost structures and the delays and the challenges that we have in current US healthcare, really coming together at this moment for us to really get to, I think, that level of interoperability and the potential. And now the question is, and I think that this is where all of us as sort of being fellow pragmatists understand is, what is the thing that is going to push people, right, over that precipice? And honestly, the last year that we've all been through, right, and the experiences that we've had with the pandemic and watching COVID sort of splay open all of these current weaknesses in our ability to exchange clinical data, to be able to let people see what their actual benefit coverage is, for people that are fierce competitors in a particular regional market to be able to share information easily, for us to be able to roll out vaccines at scale, right, across our public health infrastructure, there could not be a more compelling business case for why it's imperative that everybody shoves themselves collectively over that precipice and that we get to the point where people are actively implementing and picking up the stuff and doing it for real. I think with the additional entrance, right, of the big players, and I know we'll get into that a little bit more, into the market, that what we're going to see is really that transformation, I think, that everybody's been holding their breath and waiting for it to happen. As data starts to free, as more players come in, the people that don't move and don't react and are slow or going to do the check the box exercise are really going to put themselves at a competitive disadvantage in the coming years. Probably not this year, but 2 to 3 years down the line, their ability to be able to share data is going to limit, right? If they don't have it right, it's going to limit their success in the market.
Pooja, you've looked at these issues from the patient Care and Alliance perspective. Well, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so, you know, I do kind of bring that lens of how do we make it easier, right, for the patients to access our data, to you know, share their data with whoever they need to. And I do think that, you know, FHIR APIs actually get us to that finally to that point that it's easier for patients to actually download their data, you know, and it does open up just a whole nother kind of area that we haven't been before. You know, Alex mentioned kind of the previous, you know, with meaningful use and all that. And I remember as a product manager, you know, on meaningful use stage 3, and we were trying to figure out how to meet that requirement of the patient to be able to view and download their record. And I remember, you know, the way we were doing it, I was thinking, you know, this is not very consumer friendly, right? I mean, yes, you can download your record, but if you can't understand it, then what's the point? So I do think that we're finally getting to the point with having some of the technology, some of the standards to allow it to be easier for patients and us as consumers, not only to download our information, but also to do those searches, right, on price transparency. How much is it going to cost for my prescription? Things like that. You know, the first thing I did when I found out that, you know, the iPhone, you can now download your patient record is I did that for my mother-in-law. You know, she's 85 years old, we often have to go to the doctor. We're constantly, you know, refilling out forms and, you know, stating what medication she's on, things like that. You know, having that record on my phone just makes it so much easier. So I think, you know, we are definitely catching up to other industries where, you know, we've been able to do things on our mobile phones for a long time, but it's nice to see this kind of transition. And I do think, you know, from an innovation standpoint, just from the consumer lens, we're definitely getting to that point that, you know, we are seeing some of that innovation actually take place and is going to help the consumers.
Okay, thanks. All right, next question for you, Alex. Let's turn more to the payers here. Are they embracing these changes? Or are they hoping it's going to go away? Are they doing the least amount possible just to check the box? What do you think?
Oh, I think it's a very mixed landscape out there as far as organizational opinions and corresponding strategies. We do have a great divide in our payer community in the sense of there's a spectrum there. We have some who are just only going to come along when the axe comes down and, you know, penalties are likely, but we have other ones who are just pushing the envelope and to some degree pulling folks along, whether they're in the Blues family or in the commercial payer community. And I think that to some degree, like we've heard a lot about provider burden, but I think there is a landscape in the payer community that they feel overburdened and has its own compliance fatigue. I think there's also skepticism. There's the long of what might change, of what might work, and are we still trying to put 10 pounds into a 5-pound bag of compliance obligations? That skepticism, coupled with the longer-term sort of trust dynamics in payer-provider community, plus the sustainability themes for payers and beyond, because their business models are changing rapidly as well. And so they're starting to look at having to consider things with different lenses than they ever had to, because they're that payer-provider, you know, combination payer-provider kind of bigger business organizations. But I think there's also the history of our past approaches. There's some resistance and some market share protections that has trained us as an industry to wait for regs and incentives to create movement. And there's way more check the box mentality than I'd like to see. And it'd be great if we could take these policy and regs that win standards and look at them as a solid foundation for our business plan on which we grow and compete, as opposed to just check the box. And I've been watching this really be a dynamic since our HIPAA implementations. We needed HIPAA to get us all going in the right direction because it was the Wild West out there. And then we just created this unintended consequence, maybe a Pavlovian sort of dynamic of waiting for that incentive to come about. But yet I'm really optimistic that I see, especially under the FHIR Accelerator community, the group of thought leaders who've been on this journey as well for decades and want to call it different and are leaning in and putting their money where their mouth is and really trying to make it a stronger course forward for all of us based upon the historical challenges and experiences that we've had.
Now, Jocelyn, with your experience with the Da Vinci Fire Accelerator, this payer-provider collaboration, what are your comments about this thought that the payers are burdened as well?
I think it's a completely fair point. And I would tell you, when I talk to folks sort of outside the industry, they ask what it's like in healthcare. We've joked about this in the past. I see a freneticism in sort of a workload right now. And I think that there's a couple factors that are at play here. I think that to Alex's point, there's a lot of entrenched operational support and infrastructure in place that's been running, right, to run EDI for a number of years. And that there's been minimal and attempts at doing clinical data exchange with payers. But because of those historical, really more combative relationships between payers and providers, that hasn't moved forward. We get to see in Da Vinci, on a daily basis, really where those relationships are changing, right? And that you are seeing sort of that party of the willing, that clue dynamic, which payer with which provider is at a point in time in their trust relationship and their contracting to agree to exchange clinical information more at scale. And that's been game changing. And, of course, the backdrop of sort of the feds really leveraging the progress that we're making on Da Vinci, is you can't put too fine a point on that. But I do think that, there's waste across the board and there's different DNA out there across the players. And the people that are positioning themselves to really leverage these modern APIs and to really transform their organizations and how they work and how they view their relationships with their provider partners are the folks that are going to come through that curve faster. And, not surprisingly, we're seeing it with a lot of the smaller folks that have very significant Medicare Advantage lines of business, and that it's been really fantastic, I think, to watch really our colleagues at CMS really use payment reform in CMS as a giant lever for the rest of the industry to really drive transformation. And I think if the responses, because I read most of them, to the most recent burden reduction rule that was proposed in December are true, people like where the industry is headed. They want more time, right? Because they have so many regulatory obligations to make, but that people fundamentally agree that we need to change how we work together as an industry, and that those relationships need to move forward into more collaboration to really support, the needs to free up time and direction for providers to provide more care, but also for the payer's role as part of a care team, helping to help our most vulnerable populations actually do better and get better care and get better outcomes is the way forward. That's not to say, holistically, there's no Pollyanna-ish conversation. There's still healthy skepticism, I think, probably amongst the four of us sitting on this call today. But I think that we can see points of light of where people are really driving what the future is going to look like.
Now, Pooja, you've looked at these issues deeply from the NCPDP and PBM angle. Comments here or questions for Alex?
Yeah, well, I do want to go back to something that Alex said. And I think, you do see the gamut, right, amongst payers of, there's some that are literally just going to check the box. There's others that are forward thinking. But I think it's a whole transformation in the way of thinking. And today, payers are not used to opening up their data. And just some of the payers we've been working with, it's been interesting to kind of hear the internal conversations that are going on when we come to them and say, okay, here's what you need to be doing. Here's how you need to be thinking about it, because they're not used to sharing data. They're not used to opening up their data to others. It's this whole kind of, we're flipping this whole model of how they're used to working. And I think, Ken, you asked about the PBM space. I think it's the same thing. On the pharmacy side, we're not quite there yet where we're looking at APIs and things, but we need to be, right? And how do we make it easier for data to be shared? How do we make it easier for patients to access their data? That's all coming on the pharmacy side as well. But the other thing I just wanted to bring up is there's so many kind of things in place today from interoperability and patient access standpoint that payers are having to meet. And then you bring in, we also have this price transparency thing that's coming down the road, right? 1/1/2022, payers have to have, in order to meet the CMS regulation, they have to have the ability to, share their negotiated rates and things like that. We saw it on the hospital side that one, literally people are just checking the box. And I have a feeling that's going to happen on the payer side. as well, just because everyone is in this rush to kind of meet what's in place today for patient access and interoperability, that all the price transparency stuff just kind of gets left behind. I mean, there's been, you know, articles out there showing what hospitals are doing to meet the 1-1-21 rule, which went into place last month, and they're literally just taking their charge master and putting it out on a website. You know, that to me is not getting to where we need to be in order of sharing data. But on the other hand, to both Alex and Jocelyn's point, you know, there is this burden on the payers. There is this burden on the hospitals to kind of meet all these, you know, rules, these regulations all of a sudden. So something is going to have to, you know, at some point you do have to just check the box on some things. But I think the point is we got to get people thinking outside of that checking the box. What is it, you know, where can they focus? What are the specific use cases that they could be looking at to give them a market advantage, to make it easier for their members, to make it easier for consumers? And I think that's where people need to be kind of paying attention.
I think Pooja brings up a really good point that we're not just transforming standards, we're transforming culture. Change management at the payer, the provider, the patient. It's how does a patient, a citizen start, or a possible patient even think about doing their homework and their research? How do they become informed? So we have an educational foundation, you know, of using technology, of interpreting information, of doing collaboration with your payers, your providers, your benefit plans, and your family budget to kind of stitch all this together from that perspective. And then the complexities of this is the way we've always done it, or this is my market share and this is how I know to protect my market share for payers and providers. It's really complex. And I've seen the territorial dynamics, whether it was HIPAA, whether it was high tech, or in the HIE land in particular, every state and region, and you guys have done a tremendous amount of workload, you know, analysis in the HIE space, and have probably seeing these models that have had to homegrown in all the various territories and states to be able to figure out what's the negotiation that you can achieve to get to brokered deal about how to at least move the needle on health information exchange. So I think Pooja's comments about this history of payers and the cultural transformation is always one of our shortcomings in the implementation efforts that we've undertaken, at least that I've seen in 30 years.
You know, Alex, you speak of negotiation and now we're looking at change. We got a new federal administration. How do you see this playing out over the next few years? Will we see more regulation? What's in our future here?
Well, I think one of the things that I'm extremely optimistic about, especially from the perch of spending 8 years at the National Committee on Vital and Health Statistics and also as a state HIT coordinator, the public health infrastructure has been duct taped together and underfunded for decades. And it is amazing the work that people have done at local, county, and state levels in partnerships with the CDC. And it's also amazing to me how much the commercial sector will rely upon registry and public health information like birth and death registries for, like, think about life insurance as an example. But there are a lot of people who use the data, but very few people who help support the public health infrastructure. So I think that we're going to see a lot of transformation in the public health space, and I think for the good. And I think we've already started to see some of those opportunities with, like, electronic case reporting and the use of FHIR take hold in the federal government. I think having a new national coordinator like Mickey Tripathi is going to really help leverage the implementation efforts so far, but take us to the next round of progress. You know, the industry of healthcare is a huge part of our GDP. What are we still at, like 18%? But the community itself is relatively small in comparison. And so I think those of us who are playing and rolling up our sleeves and really trying to lean in and make a difference, it is, you know, we have history and we're trying to build on what's worked and what hasn't worked along the way. And I think that this current mantra of patient-centered healthcare is going to continue, but I think we may reset on some programmatic nuances, but I don't think there's going to be major shifts. Like Jocelyn was commenting about, people really want to see this burden reduction work and they want to address fatigue and achieve improved workflows and really supporting citizens as being a more engaged driver in their own well-being. And the work that Jocelyn and I collaborated on in the intersection of clinical and administrative data really shows that, we have a very bright horizon through increased collaboration. I think FHIR is a key tenant to sort of bridging a number of the issues out there. But I'm not expecting a hard left turn in this next administration.
Well, let me ask you, has HIPAA run its course? Are we headed to a post-HIPAA world? And what might that look like?
Well, okay, when we talk about post-HIPAA world, I'm going to infer that that's specific to the administrative simplification provisions for the transaction standards, because HIPAA and its four pillars of administrative simplification also includes vocabularies, privacy, security, and identifiers. So when we think about everything we're doing in EHRs, it still relies on those vocabularies, the privacy and the security and the identifier aspects. But I don't think you can say that it's going away anytime soon. I think there's still a place for EDI. I just think EDI, if it wants to have such a prominent role moving forward, is going to have to reinvent itself.
Yeah. All right. Well, as we look to wrap up this podcast, Alex, any final thoughts, any opportunities, initiatives, industry asks that you have that you'd like to mention here?
Absolutely. Get educated and involved in standards development, whether it's, and when I say standards development, that can be policy, that can be technology standards. And if you can't play on the national level that way directly, you always can public, you know, offer your public comment on proposed rulemakings. But you also have lots of regional collaborations, whether they're through the chapters of the HEMA or CHIME, HIMSS, or, you know, national organizations such as WEDI. We all can influence. We all have experiences to bring to bear, and we all should exercise our voice and to strengthen our nation's trajectory and the agility to respond to all the amazing technology and medical advances that are yet to come. So if you can't get involved directly, then tap into the expertise like of those expert folks at POCP or Imprado, because they can inject that knowledge and add to your story, to their library of perspectives from which we influence.
Pooja, final thoughts?
Yeah, I think, just real quickly on the question you had about, you know, is HIPAA going away? I think the one thing to keep in mind is it's not going away, but it's being added to, right? And as we open up the patient data, the FTC all of a sudden starts getting involved. So it's almost additive, right? And I agree with Alex. I don't think it's going away anytime soon. That's kind of the foundation for all of this. But I also want to echo Alex's comments. Get involved, you know, I'm of course on the NCPDP board. And I tell you, pharmacy, you know, always kind of, you know, is on the periphery, but we need to start bringing pharmacy folks and pharmacy standards kind of along as well. You know, there's so much, especially, you know, even now, again, going back to the pandemic and the vaccines and the distribution of vaccines, you know, we're now starting to see it end up in the pharmacies, right? So how do we make sure that information is getting fed back into the public health databases? How do we, you know, keep track of all that? There's just so much around, you know, happening around standards, around just everything that's happening in the industry, that we need people's input, we need people's involvement. And to Alex's point, just even comment, like come to the table and you know, bring us use cases, bring us situations that you may be in where we can help, you know, with those standards, things like that. So Alex, it's been great having you here. I feel like we could just go on and on, and looking forward to when we can actually get back together again in the Ubers at HIPAA, at HIMSS, and share our stories. So this has been great. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah. Jocelyn, a final statement to take us out?
Yeah, sure. I think this is great. And I just love everything that these two just wrapped up with, because they're like literally reading off of the notes I've written on my page. I think one of the things that I would just add to this is I think that it's this idea of sort of 1 + 1 = 3, right? And I think that as we look at the existing EDI infrastructure, the existing roles and endpoints that are out there, you know, this idea of adding the patient to the mix, I think is going to get us to that really sort of revolution of being able to make things shoppable, about making things in real time, you know, leveraging these standards, but they're going to be additive and fill the gaps on what's missing today and eventually potentially replace or reduce the reliance on maybe some of the older technologies. I think that's critically important. And when we think about getting involved, I think there's a whole spectrum of how you can get engaged. I think that letters do matter. I think that phone calls do matter. I think almost even more so that if you're not the person who's in an org that can send somebody to a standards organization, being updated enough and versant enough about where things are headed so that you can be asking your vendors and your partners where they are on using these standards, if you can become an implementer, if you can pick up some of these emerging standards and use them, there is a place for everyone at the table for wherever you are in your own journey. And this really is the fun stuff, right? I believe that we are in an industry in massive transformation, and that doesn't happen very often over the course of a career. So if you can figure out how to get engaged, there's plenty of opportunities. You just have to figure out which use case is most important to me in my current business and the situation that I am with my training partners to figure out where to get started. Awesome. Thanks, Ken. Thanks, Alex. Thanks, Pooja.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned bringing people to the table. I guess that matches to our theme of the dish. So I want to thank my co-hosts, Pooja Babra and Jocelyn Keegan, and especially to thank our distinguished guest, Alex Goss of Imprato. And thanks to our audience for listening to this edition of Point of Care Partners, the dish on Health IT. Please follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or really whatever platform you use to pick up your podcasts. And if you prefer, you could also watch our podcasts on the video channel on the POC website. And remember, Health IT is a dish best served hot.
Is it a challenge to stay on top of interoperability regulations and the flurry of activity with fire accelerators? Email us at interopoutlook@pocp.com to learn more about our new interoperability outlook subscription monitoring service.